There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I'm Andy Dawson.
I'm Sam Delaney.
And welcome to part three of the Keegan Odyssey, where we look back at Kevin Keegan's autobiography from 2018. What's it called? My Life in Football.
My Life in Football, I think.
Yeah.
But it's so much more than that, isn't it?
Oh, it's so much more than a life. It's a universe. We left it at the end of episode two. Now, we've done two episode twos, haven't we? It's complicated.
Yeah.
So the original episode two that we did, we left
we
it
forgot
at the end.
The simple way of putting it is we forgot we'd done episode two.
Yeah. Well, we knew we'd done it, but we forgot we put it out.
Then we recorded another episode two, and we're putting that out as well, because fuck it,
that's
why
already,
not?
That's already out by now.
Little of it has any relevance to the content of the book.
That's already out by now, because it's got some nice stuff about cows in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't argue with that. We join Keegan in the segment of the book where he's talking about his childhood home. It was a little terraced house, he says. It was a detached outhouse where we washed. Our bath was an old zinc tub and the toilet was at the foot of the garden. It used to take an age to fill the bath by boiling water on gas rings. We never had electricity till I was 10. It's all like the Four Yorkshiremen and the Monty Python sketch,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Just look at how much we suffered and how hard upbringing was.
But it must be true. Keegan's not the sort of guy who I would expect. If anything, I would expect Keegan to be the sort of bloke who'd sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
Like maybe he has. He's like, oh, I don't think we need to go into all of that, when he was talking to his ghostwriter.
Himself.
Oh, no, it weren't all that bad. And then the ghostwriter's going, yeah, but I heard that you had a tin bath that you had to fill up with boiling hot water. Yeah, but that were great fun. That were part of the fun. Who wants boring old taps?
What he does just say the toilet was at the foot of the garden. He doesn't say how the toilet, you know, manifested itself. It might have just been a hole.
A hole in the garden. Or not even
with
a hole.
With a bit of tarpaulin over the top.
Again,
of it.
For kids, that's more of an appeal. Like my son, we've only got one toilet in my house.
Yeah.
That, not to be Four Yorkshiremen about it myself, but yeah, it's pretty hard. And
just the one indoors.
Just one indoors.
Yeah.
And it's indoors. Okay. But, which is something, admittedly. But when my son discovered not that long ago that if he was super desperate and freaking out,
yeah,
that I'd go, yeah, just this once you can go in the garden. Since then, he just always wants to go in the garden.
Yeah.
To the extent that if he knows someone's in there, like having a bath or whatever, so you know it's occupied,
yeah,
it'll be like, I'm desperate. I know he's not desperate. He just wants any opportunity to piss in the back garden.
Ooh.
So, kids,
used to do that.
Yeah, I used to piss out the back.
I used to have some decking at the back, and sometimes if I was downstairs drinking and I couldn't be bothered to go upstairs, I'd just go.
Oh yeah, when I was with the beer,
yeah,
if my wife and kids were asleep upstairs,
yeah,
and I was downstairs, you know, watching telly, just getting on the can solo style, you didn't want to go upstairs and back and wake them up.
You don't want to
disturb them.
You're thinking about
so you think it's easier just to repeatedly piss in the back garden because it's pitch black, the neighbours can't see.
Exactly. And it's quite freeing as well, isn't it?
It kind of
unleashes the inner hippie.
It makes you feel like a stray man.
Yeah. We all want to be a stray man, don't we? So then they moved to a council house in Bowlby, the suburb of Doncaster, where they filmed Open All Hours.
Oh, wow.
Now, here's a fascinating fact. Shop in Open All Hours, that corner shop, not a corner shop, as Keegan himself says, a hairdresser salon, believe it or not.
Oh.
So there we are.
Is he right, believe it or not? Or do you
he does
that,
believe
you're
it or not, but it doesn't put an excitement mark afterwards.
Kevin Keegan's Believe It or Not. Throughout this book, I will be giving you facts that you can believe if you choose to or don't. I don't care. But they are facts nonetheless.
Number one. The shop where they filmed Open All Hours, it's a hairdresser salon. Believe it or not, it's true. KK's facts. He says, I was actually born at my Aunt Nellie's house in Armthorpe on Valentine's Day 1951 because she had electricity and that made it safer for childbirth.
Yeah, you do need electric to give birth to a baby.
I think you like put a charge through the baby once it's born, don't you? Just to power it up.
What happens were you present at the birth of your two children?
I was, yeah. There was electricity there
I don't know how easy it was, but if the mum is struggling to push the baby out...
Yeah.
And you do not want a cesarean for reasons, because surgery is always a risk.
Or religious reasons, perhaps.
Or religious reasons, exactly. A lot of people, different faiths, don't believe in cesareans. So what they can do, if you ask them, but you have to ask.
You have to ask them.
They won't offer it up.
You can't just demand it.
They plug what's basically like a spark plug. But an overpowered one via cable into the mains. They pop that up the mum's bum.
Right.
They give it a charge and the baby shoots out the front. Yeah, and it goes... and they have to sort of catch it in like a baseball mitt. And that's an electrocharged baby. If they overcharge it, which can happen, you know what you end up with?
An excitable child.
Kevin Keegan. They accidentally put too many watts in the charge up the mum's bum.
Yeah.
Then you got Mighty Mouse, Double K himself.
You get what's called an irrepressible child.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And that is may well be the secret to Keegan's success.
That's what it is. So he was born there for electrical reasons, and it was safer for childbirth. He says, I was christened Joseph, named after my father, in a family tradition, though I never heard anyone call me that till a register was read out on my first day at school. I had no idea it was me and assumed it must be another boy with the same surname. Joseph Keegan. Oh, there's another Keegan in this class. Fantastic. Joseph Keegan. Oh, maybe it's me.
My name's Kevin, sir. Kevin Keegan, mind. It's either a coincidence or someone's been telling fibs about my real name.
I'm sure it's not the first time someone will lie about me or say things behind my back. Mike Ashley.
We'll keep an eye on that as my life unfolds. Anyway, present.
And he talks about his dad. And his dad had a stubborn streak. He says, if dad thought he was in the right, he was in the right. His word was his bond, and mum always used to laugh about the night he was walking home from the pub and saw a man and woman fighting in the street. Dad had come out of the Scarborough Arms.
Ooh.
And, with his acute sense of right and wrong, felt compelled to go over. He got hold of the fella to ask him what the hell he was doing. And bang! The woman gave him a right hook.
Oh.
Mind your own business! They had to pick dad off the floor. There was a lesson to be learned from that story, but I like the fact that he was trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. What is the lesson?
Don't get involved in other people's domestics.
Keep out. If you see two people in the street having a row, stay well out of it. Don't be a hero.
Yeah, definitely. Fucking points! It gets slightly more grim next. He says, Mum knew the importance of hard work. She left school at 14 and took jobs in various factories. She spent so long standing on those concrete factory floors that she'd suffered terribly with varicose veins.
All die.
And one of my childhood jobs, says Kevin, was to let her rest her legs on me.
Oh, God.
Kevin!
It's mama's leg time.
Come on!
It's your mum's leg time. The veins are playing up, so we're chronic, Kevin.
Get on your hands and knees, Kevin! I'm going to put my legs up on you!
No problem, ma'am. Just come in. And I was there, quick as a flash.
KK's always here to help. It says she was told her veins were so bad there was nothing they could do to help her, but that wasn't good enough for me when I was old enough to do something about it. I trained as a surgeon in my spare time.
A vein specialist.
And carried out an operation in the back bedroom.
A vein specialist, if you don't mind.
On Saturday night, when I was old enough to do something, I went to see a specialist who said he could help. And so Mum had an operation in London. We were very close, my mum and me.
Yeah,
sounds
it. I
wonder if that means he sat in on the operation and watched. Oof. He probably had a go as well, didn't he? He'll have had that board game operation where you've got to use the tweezers to get the little body parts out. You know the one I mean? And then if you touch the sides of the cavities, it buzzes.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pull the bread basket out or whatever it is.
Yeah, operation. I've got it at home.
I'm sure you have.
I've got it.
Yeah.
In fact, you've reminded me about the problem with it is if I go back to it, if it hasn't been played in anything more than a couple of weeks, several pieces will be missing.
Have you got it in the house or is it in, up your storage?
No, it's in the house.
With your dressing
That's
up stuff?
That's why I've got the bloody storage, because there's so many fucking toys and board games in the house that all the other good stuff has had to go up the storage.
We need to do a podcast up your storage. Yeah.
We could do it live from my storage. Yeah. I've actually thought, when I've been up there, but you don't have storage, do you?
No.
When I've been up
I don't have enough stuff.
I've got one work up the storage and one home.
Yeah.
And I've actually used two different brands. Oh. One's Shergard, I think it's called. Not Shergard.
Don't give too much information out, because people will try and, you know, get in there. And
all right. Well, I've been up one storage, and I've often thought they're like eerie places, because all it is hole upon hole upon hole of these generic industrial-looking units.
Yeah.
And you can get like you don't know what floor you're on, what position you're in. It's very easy to get lost
like
in them. All the same. Looks like a prison, but almost bleaker. And I was thinking it would be a great setting for a sort of an action thriller.
Yeah.
The storage.
Yeah, up the storage.
Like Liam Neeson. He's up the storage.
Yeah.
Right, and then the storage, for some reason, becomes like it's hijacked by terrorists. I don't know
You don't know which unit they're in.
You're just fucking running
feels
around
a bit
the
like
storage.
Die Hard, doesn't it?
It does but feel with, like Die Hard, yeah, but with storage. And that's, what he could use is you go into the storage to make... It's a bit like, you know, when the A-Team got in places and just had to build weapons or vehicles out of whatever they could find. Always there was a fucking welding torch for some reason. But,
of course there was. And some cabbages.
Yeah, but it's like that meets Die Hard. Meat's taken, because obviously we want Liam Neeson in it.
Yeah.
And because what he'd do is he'd break into different stories. You never know what's going to be behind the door.
Yeah.
But whatever's in there, you can turn into a makeshift weapon.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there could be a bit where he batters a terrorist to death using operation.
Yeah. Sticks the tweezer up his fucking chap's eye.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Lovely image. Have right. some of that, you terrorist bastard.
Well, we've gone from that, from the varicose veins to that, so where do we go next? Oh, God, here's where we go next. In those days, we lived opposite the Co-op funeral services, and when I was old enough to start kicking a ball around, my friends and I would use the mortuary doors at the back as our goal.
That's horrible.
It gets horribler. We would also sneak inside to peer at the dead bodies.
Oh, yeah.
If the owner, Mr. Anderson, was out and his son, David, one of my pals, knew where to locate the keys. Of course, I knew where to locate the keys. We thought nothing of walking around the different corpses, making up stories about how these people might have met their end.
Fucking hell. Mind you, they didn't have PlayStations or iPhones back then, did they?
They didn't.
All you had was a corpse, if you were lucky.
Everyone was at it. I mean, Jimmy Savile was doing this sort of thing, wasn't he, apparently?
Oh, he was banging to it, yeah.
Literally. I mean, you know... I wonder what making up stories about how these people might have met their ends. Do you think they like put together little musicals and shows and kind of stuff, reanimated them, got them on strings, and maybe sat them up and pretend chat shows with them or
with
something
Keegan's,
like that?
Yeah. I'll be Parky, and you pretend that this fella here is Muhammad Ali. Oh, make this one into Buzz Aldrin, the astronaut, and ask him all about his time on the moon.
But he says, it did backfire one day when David, who was 3 years older than me, rushed over to break the news that Father Christmas was dead. Dun, dun, dun. And how did Father Christmas die? For fuck's sake. He says, I was 6 at the time, and I just started to wonder about this bearded old man riding a sleigh who would come down the chimney with a sack full of presents if we were good little boys and girls. Was there such a person? I had come to the conclusion that, yes, there was.
Definitely.
In 6. Yes, I'm sure about this. And now,
sure as eggs is eggs, there's a fucking Santa Claus.
And now I was being told he was lying across the street, stone cold dead.
Oh, God.
I went over to see for myself, and sure enough, there was a big fellow in one of the coffins with a long white beard who looked very much like the Father Christmas my mum had taken me to see in one of the town's big stores. How can you take in such devastating news? It was a tragedy, not least because Christmas was only a few weeks away. Who was going to put the tin soldiers in my stocking?
That could have been a seminal moment in Double K's life.
It could have been. It's like... with Paul Gascoigne kind of harks back all of his emotional problems to the time he saw a neighbour's kid get run over in the street.
Really?
Yeah, that happened in front of his eyes. And he says,
oh, like Jim Morrison with the Indians dying on the roadside.
What was that then?
He goes, Indians lying on Dawn's Highway Bleeding.
All right.
What is it? Tears stain the young child's fragile eggshell mind.
Oh, okay.
What he's going on about is in Riders of the Storm.
Yeah.
He's driving along the freeway when he's a kid with in the back with his parents in the front.
Right.
It's a bunch of Native Americans.
Yeah.
And they've had a car crash and they're just lying, screaming, dying.
Fuck.
And they just drive straight past and Jim Morrison looks out the window. He's like, oh, cripes.
And cripes.
Cripes.
And like, the kid, the audience went, cripes.
Cripes. Oh, cripes, Mom. How are we going to stop?
Golly gee.
There's a bunch of Indians dying. We ain't got time for that, Jim.
And we call them Native Americans now, Jim.
So Jim quickly started, the young Jim started scribbling down Riders in the Storm. And it was
as a kid? You started writing it then?
I don't know. It just lived with him.
Right.
And if you watch Oliver Stone's movie of The Doors as well, there's a lot of flashback sequences to that incident. Because
that was the pivotal moment in his life.
Exactly.
That turned him into a knobhead.
Yeah. It was from that moment that I started acting like a complete knob and calling myself the Lizard King.
I got my first pair of leather trousers 3 weeks later.
Started going topless everywhere.
One day I got my dick out at school. I started falling asleep in the bath. I didn't give a shit.
So whether you're Kevin Keegan,
it's
you're Jim Morrison, or Paul Gascoigne, and everyone's got a moment.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what mine is.
I've
probably
got one
told
either,
you it at some point inadvertently.
Or it hasn't come out yet. Maybe you've like hidden it away.
It'll come out on one of these podcasts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jalapeño.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Jalapeño.
I don't think I've got one.
You'll have one, mate.
Probably have, but again, I've probably hidden.
You'll have one moment that the rest of your life has been leading directly from.
Yeah.
Emotionally.
Okay.
But we'll find out.
It might have been school sports day when I was 6.
Yeah.
And I was doing the obstacle course and I was in the lead.
Yeah.
Because I was quite small and nimble nippy. Yeah. I was in the lead and I went into like a tunnel to crawl through. And someone had dropped or lost a gold medal from a previous event in this tunnel. And I came across it and I stopped and I looked at it and I thought, what should I do? Should I take this out and give it to someone? Should I leave it here? And by the time I decided and got out the other end of the tunnel, I finished like 5th or something.
You absolute idiot.
No.
And how did you feel?
Good. I still feel bad now.
But in a way, your conscience, you could look at that in two ways, because in one way, what you weren't being was pragmatic and cynical.
Yeah.
What you were doing was you were letting your conscience rule you.
And I did. I took it out and handed it in. But what I could have done? I could have just kept it and I would have been the winner because it was a gold medal.
It says a lot about you, mate, and I think it says more good than bad. You're not a man who wants to engage in a cynical rat race, trample other people behind you just so you can say you're someone else's idea of number one, of a champion in what? Another man's arbitrary, completely manufactured contest?
Yeah, exactly.
You've got bigger things on your mind, like other people.
Global thoughts. I care about the community.
You're the man in the tunnel contemplating someone else's medal.
I am.
And foregoing your victory.
And that probably has shaped me to make me a better man than Paul Gascoigne and Jim Morrison and even yourself.
If you'd been like one of the dragons off of Dragon's Den, like, what are their names?
There's Theo and there's Duncan.
If you'd been Theo Perfidis,
you'd
have totally ignored that. No, what you'd have done is grabbed the gold medal and pocketed
it. Stuffed
it
down my shorts and kept going and won another gold for yourself.
Popped it up your bum because actually there's no pockets in the shorts. Popped it up your bum and carried on running, won, and then pulled it out, got your gold medal, probably tripped over other people on the way, won it and popped both round your fucking neck.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it could quite easily have been stored in the waistband of the shorts. I don't know what you mean by put it up your bum. That's probably quite telling about yourself. But again, we'll come back to that in a later
Perfidis.
Episode. No, you said that though.
I'm speculating. Yeah. I know Perfidis. No, I don't know him personally, but I've observed him. He used to own Millwall. And you know what they say about Millwall, always up to their own tricks. It's a classic Millwall trick. Steal the medal, pop it up your own bum.
Yeah, well, I think that'll come back in a little podcast to possibly haunt you, but we'll see. Shall we move back to Kevin Keegan?
Kevin Keegan.
Where are we at? So Santa Claus is dead.
Yeah.
That age, he says, we already had our run money-making schemes. I cleaned cars with David and Morris, David Anderson, I don't know who Morris is, at the Glasgow paddocks, where hundreds of horses were kept in stables, and some of the racegoers who were staying at the Dunham Hotel were wealthy enough to reward us with a shilling or even a half crown.
Oh.
Don't know what that is.
Yeah, he's making it up.
Yeah. It was too good to last, sadly, and when it was decided the paddocks would be knocked down, the local newspaper, the Doncaster Free Press, heard about our plight and printed a picture of us sitting disconsolately on our buckets.
Oh, imagine if he... I wonder if he got that. No, I don't. I've looked through the picture section of the book. I don't think he's got it.
No, we'll have to find that ourselves. We'll have to go into the archives. We'll take a trip to Doncaster. We're going to go to Pontefract, aren't we, and do the haunted house.
We'll do the ghost, while we're there, in the same, it probably isn't far.
We'll do Doncaster.
They're both Yorkshire.
We'll go to the library, go through the archives of the Free Press, and we'll find a picture of Keegan sitting on his bucket, and we'll tweet it out, and then wonder why we've done that.
I was on the cover of the South London Press once, shaking hands with John Prescott, when I was a teenager.
Right.
And it was a general election, and he'd come to Clapham Junction to talk about Labour's transport plans for London.
God. So you were all ears, I imagine.
He had a big map of it, and I stood in while he was pointing at the map, and I stood in and looked like an interested commuter, which I was.
Of course you were.
Went on the cover. Years and years later, this was 1992, years and years later, like a couple of years ago, I was interviewing him on News Thing.
Yeah.
And
the topical comedy show, which is currently rested.
It's rested, yeah. But it's the much lamented.
Yeah.
And he said, and I said to one of the researchers and the producer, I told him, I was on the front cover of a newspaper once when I was a kid with John Prescott. And they went, the producer said, we've got to get that. It's amazing. We've got to get it. I said, well, it's really old. I don't have a copy. It'll be in the archives. They sent a researcher down to the archives of the South London Press. She was down there for a whole fucking day. I said, it'll be around, just research when the general election campaign of 92 was. Yeah. It will be somewhere between those weeks. It was only a weekly newspaper, so there could only have been about 8 to 12 copies.
How did it take her a day?
Hey?
How did it take her a whole day to do that?
Well, because it just wasn't there. And she was nervous to come back because what she was effectively saying and what everyone thought and probably still thinks is
You're lying, I made it up. Yeah.
But come on. On our other podcast, we do great bullshits of our time. And being on the front page of South London Press talking about transport plans with John Prescott is not a good bullshit.
It's lukewarm at best,
isn't it? I wouldn't waste my time with it. It's been fucking censored. It's been deleted from the archives.
Fucking hell.
Probably has.
Illuminati.
Yeah.
Something like that. Someone's gone back and seen it and gone, that's Sam Delaney from News Thing.
Yeah.
And that's John Prescott from Labour.
We've got to have this deleted.
This is
he gold. Works.
This
he's
is
a Russian
dynamite.
Spy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at this Delaney character. He's like Forrest Gump. He pops up through the archives everywhere at all the most significant moments in history. Like John Prescott's famous unveiling of Labour's plans for a South London train network.
In the election they lost in 92. Yeah.
Everywhere this man is somewhere. This is it. So Keegan, he's impressive, isn't he, with all his jobs and schemes, as he called them, money-making schemes, which is very much the language of the Beano, isn't it?
He's irrepressible. He won't be knocked down. He bounces back up. He's like a Weeble.
Yeah.
He's football's Weeble, if anything.
Just constant energy.
Mm.
We'll find out in a minute about how far he goes to work his way into professional football.
Well, before we even get to that, he's still only 7.
Yeah.
And he says, sadly, my attempts at the age of 7 to get a newspaper round led to nothing other than my pride being hurt.
Oh.
And that pride is as big as his heart.
Yeah.
And his heart is bigger than his body.
Yeah.
So like that's Sean a lot Phillips. Of hurt.
Yeah.
He says, Dad took me to the local newsagents to see if there were any vacancies, but I was knee high to a grasshopper. And when the shop owner peered over the counter to look me up and down, she tried to explain as gently as she could that it might be tricky giving me a job when I could not reach the letterboxes.
Yeah.
Hang on.
But how impressive is that?
He's seven.
Seven.
How tall is a 7 year old? You've got a 7 year old.
I've got a 7 year old. Well, he's about this big, what, like 4 foot something?
4 and a half something? Four foot five? Yeah, yeah. Can he reach a letterbox?
Yeah, no problem.
Of course he can. So what the fuck's this news agent
going
about?
Well, because I think that she was being disingenuous. Really, the issue here is it's too young for a child to have a job out on the street.
But this is KK.
I know, it's double K, so he thinks there's different rules for him.
He defeats all the odds every time.
But as an employer, you know, it's more than you just... It's just too much trouble to put a seven-year-old out at those at the wee small hours where it's still dark, out in the streets on their own. I would not put my fucking son out there.
This was Doncaster, though, in the 60s.
I know,
or
I am
50s.
Thinking
I'm sure
that
they were sending them up chimneys
they're
then.
Probably, yeah, down the
down
mines,
the mines
and everything.
And everything.
My dad used to take me down the mine because he couldn't afford a canary, so he'd use me to check for gas. Luckily, I never died.
I had to tell him when I start to feel a bit woozy and we go home.
No more coal for us today, Double K, he'd say. That's what he always called me.
And then, so he couldn't get this job as a paper lad, and it went further. It said, she walked me down the road for a trial and she must have chosen the most awkward letterbox in Doncaster because even on tiptoes I could not get close. So she's like, she's gone. You can't have the job. You can't reach the letterboxes.
Yeah.
And he's gone, I can reach the letterboxes.
Let's prove it. Let's go out now.
She's gone, all right then. So she's taken him to the most awkward letterbox in Doncaster and proven that he can't reach it. It'll have been one of them posh houses with a letterbox up the side.
I've got to say, this sounds like conspiracy stuff from Double K, doesn't it?
Are you saying he's lying?
Not lying, but I just think...
already established he's not lying.
Yeah, but I don't think he'd ever consciously lie. I don't think he's that sort of person. But I do think that he would be confused by failure because he's just like, but I'm Double K. Why won't you give me this opportunity?
He wouldn't acknowledge it.
Why wouldn't you give me that opportunity? Oh, I get it. You probably stitch me up by sending me down the notorious, what they call the Giant's Causeway in the postman community in Doncaster.
He's kind of like the Black Knight from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Even if all his limbs are cut off, he will still keep coming at you.
Yeah.
So, he's been told, it's been proven that he can't reach the letterboxes, so he says, I'll carry a box around with me.
Fucking
I please
hell.
It. He will not be beaten.
Yeah.
So he's going to have a big sack of newspapers on his shoulder and he's going
to
carry
to
an orange crate
and
around.
And imagine how much longer it would take as well.
God.
Walking down each path, putting the box down, climbing onto the box, putting the paper through, climbing off of the box, picking it back up. Fuck me, it would add an hour minimum to the average kid's round.
He says the best she could offer was a job in a few years' time and a sympathetic pat on the head. I went back home, got on all fours, and let my mum put her legs up on me.
It was back to the day job. My mum's veins. This and
that. Not many footballers have a nun as their first mentor, and
true.
Sister Mary was certainly quite a sight as she refereed with her crucifix flying around and her habit whipping round her knees. Just when you think this book can't give you any more, it gives you a footballing referee nun.
Yeah. His mentor, he credits her along with Shanks, doesn't he?
He says his first mentor. He says, I would go so far as to say she had the same influence on me at school as Bill Shankly did later on at Liverpool. Kevin's football must be encouraged, she wrote in my school report in 1961, and I never forgot the way she gave me something to believe in. Kevin's football must be encouraged, and he should be discouraged from hanging around with corpses and putting on chat shows. A world of change has taken place since then. I've always wanted to encourage others in the way Sister Mary did with me. She was a huge influence, and I still have photographs of the two of us when the newspapers arranged a reunion many years later. It gave me a chance to say thank you, and we kept in touch over the following years.
So he says that he tries to implement Sister Mary's management techniques.
At Newcastle?
And City, and England. Right. I used to dress up as a nun. I put a crucifix round my neck, and when the lads were least expecting it, I'd suddenly appear in their hotel rooms. I'd affect an Irish accent and start making them drop to their knees and read from a Bible. If they got anything wrong, I'd wrap them over the knuckles with a big stick.
And I'd put my varicose veined legs up on their backs as they were on all fours reading from the Bible.
The lads at Newcastle seemed to like it. Although David Jenner, I seemed to like it too much.
He started offering me money for doing it. He says, she was like an angel, so full of kindness and warmth. She used to call herself STS, Soccer Talent Spotter.
That's the fucking...
I want you to call me STS from now on.
Lads, I've come up with a great nickname for myself, so I have. It's STS. Oh, what's it stand for, Sister Mary? What the fuck do you think it stands for? Work it out, you dumb bastards. It stands for Soccer Talent Spotter. That's what I am. I live and breathe Soccer Talent Spotting. Okay. STS for short. Sounds good to me.
So then they moved house to an unpretentious council house in Waverley Avenue. It was a dream for me, says Kev, because it was directly across the road from a big grassy godsend known as the Bull Ring.
Oh.
It was luxury compared to Spring Gardens with three bedrooms, electricity.
Oh,
start
so if there are any
babies
need birthing, you
get
knew where to
round.
Come.
And an indoor lavatory. The back garden was small, but having a playing field right on the doorstep more than made up for that. The only problem was ingratiating ourselves with our new neighbours. And we probably could have made a better first impression. Listen to this. As we were carrying in our sofa, a dead mouse fell out in front of everyone.
Oh, crikey. It's the last thing you need.
Oh, I see we've got some new neighbours coming in. Oh, they look quite nice. They're bringing the sofa in themselves, look. The boy's standing on an orange box for some reason. Oh, my God, what's that? A dead mouse has fallen out of the sofa.
They're scum. They're scum. Right to the council
drive
now.
Drive them out.
A fucking dead... This street hasn't had a dead mouse in it in 30 years I've been living here. We're scrupulous about dead rodents
this
here.
This is a 1930s council house with indoor lavatories and electricity. What are they doing bringing a dead mouse into it?
It's not Victorian London. What the fucking hell? Live mice? Fine.
All over the place. Hang on a minute, though. If there's a dead mouse falling out of the sofa, how long has it been there? Because mice tend to rot
quickly
and disintegrate fairly quickly.
How do you know that?
Well, I used to have a mouse problem. And
so you put out traps?
I used to put traps down under the kitchen units and occasionally we'd go and check and there'd be a dead mouse there. But I went on holiday once and came back and there was a mouse and it just turned to like ooze.
What, like liquefied?
Yeah.
And it
stunk as well. So I'm saying, sorry Sam, I'm saying that the Keegan's mouse was a recent mouse. So it just died in their sofa just before they moved. Or it was a pet mouse.
It was my lucky mouse. I knew there was no way I'd be able to smuggle it to the new place alive, so I decided to kill it humanely and then hide its corpse in the sofa. Unfortunately, it fell out of the sofa just as we were moving in, and my whole scheme backfired.
I called it Mighty Mouse, and it inspired my nickname of the same name a few years later. Maybe it was his pet mouse. And
that mouse reminded me of myself in all but one way. It were dead. And I'm thankful to say, I'm alive still for now.
I don't think he killed it. I think it was his pet mouse and it died somehow
in transit.
And he's blocked it out psychologically.
Another crossroads. Another emotional crossroads in his life.
More so than the death of Father Christmas.
Because moving anyway is a big emotional crossroads.
Fucking arse, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
this more than the death of Father Christmas is the significant moment in his life, I think, that changed everything. And he's not even acknowledging it. He's not even accepting that it happened.
The mouse died, it's fine. And his ghostwriter's
die!
His ghostwriter's in the mirror, himself going, that sounds like it could be a significant moment. Have you got anything more to say about that? Like what? What would I say about it? It is what it is. The mouse died.
It was just a mouse.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, let's scrape the surface. What fucking surface? Get on. I want to get on to the next bit of the book. Why are you so hung up about a mouse? Mice die every day. Even while I've been saying this, probably four or five have died.
Somewhere in the world. Like maybe in Zimbabwe or Las Vegas.
In China, there's hundreds of mice dying every day.
Bang, one just died now. I'm certain of it. Get
so
over
shut
it.
Shut up.
Move on. Mice die.
Move on with your life.
Next chapter. Good point to leave it there. I think we'll end this episode. And in the next episode, in part four, we'll begin with Keegan almost being blinded by an arrow from a bow and arrow. So, you know, it keeps on giving. Come back next time in a week or so and get a load of that. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.